श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमद् महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। सो गुड मॉर्निंग, वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, वंस कनेक्टेड ऑनलाइन एज वेल। सो we are back in Bulgaria today, just for one day this time. Just returning to the other side of the globe, so on. So we will have Istagosti today in the morning here, some questions and answers. So all of you are invited to present any inquiries you may have, topics you may like to hear about, both you present here physically and those online as well. So any questions, any topics?
I wanted to ask about and now when we were in the retreat in Poland, and Guru Maharaj was reading this from his book, all these pastimes with the covered boys, and I noticed that we were all like laughing, like feeling very much, so to say, generally that we were laughing, and you were always serious.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I was
like focused.
That's a question.
I wanted to
ask you. Were you angry, Maharaj? You didn't have a bad night, but good sleep last night?
No, my point is rather, I was meditating that probably we do not approach properly these very high topics, and you are very concentrated, very serious all the time. And I was thinking that it's somehow connected with something which I think you just don't understand and cannot grasp it. And I was rather thinking about
it. Was that serious? That's serious?
Very concerned. Like you,
every time, every moment?
Every time.
Even when Madhu Mangal would appear and make some joke?
Every time.
With Madhu Mangal, I don't think I can resist.
No, my point is that maybe not to take it too huge.
I know, I get the point. Of course, just in case I clarify, I'm asking this like joking now, but just for you to know that it's not that I'm serious because I'm angry or I don't like what's been spoken about.
I don't think.
Or because you are not serious, I'm serious or something. No, you're laughing too much. You should be more serious. To be honest, trying to go back to what I was feeling those days. There is not. I was, as you mentioned, trying to hear attentively what was going on and trying to take that as deep as I could. Of course, I have my own capacity to do so. But with that, I'm not saying, therefore, you should have been as serious as I was, but you were laughing, so that means you are not taking this so deeply. I'm not saying that, no. There are ways that each devotee will react, if you will, to certain things, no? Yeah. And that can be not only because of different adhikars. With this, I'm not implying you have higher adhikar, you have lower, and the higher you go, the serious you will become or something. I'm just saying, because of adhikar, there will be, of course, different reactions. That is a general rule. Of course, you can expect the same reaction from, Bhakta Joseph from day one and through some Uttam Mahabhagavat. But it's okay. They each of them have their own reply. You cannot just imitate or be forced to imitate the other or anything. But also, I will say that even devotees on a similar situation, internal situation, doesn't mean that they have to react in the exact same way, no? Because they're individuals and they have like natures and ways of reacting to something or ways of presenting something. No, like some other devotee may speak the same things that our Guru Maharaj was speaking that day in different way also. No? We should be very careful not of thinking, oh, he's not doing like Guru Maharaj does, so that's bad, or that's worse, or that's best, or all these type of labelings that sometimes we quickly try to put, you know, like, okay, which is the correct one, which is the wrong one, which is the better and the worse, and sometimes it doesn't necessarily work like that. You know, it's not just like, you know, this dichotomy that the mind generally tries to see reality through. So yeah, I was basically trying to hear what Guru Maharaj was saying, and to, of course, knowing that that's a very deep topic and very close to his heart, so it's a serious moment for me. You know, I take it like that, but it's not that I'm not rejoicing in the narrative or in the moment, or again, or that I'm thinking why everyone else is not as serious as me. Or I mean, I was trying not to hope. I didn't know that you noticed that. I mean, that means you were not as attentive to the reading. My point. But I was just like trying to focus and hoping, okay, everyone is focused and it's not like everyone is looking at me and how serious I am and they should learn from me. I mean, not even aware that you were realizing that. But again, it's a way of, I mean, and as you may see, it's not that maybe at every single time I'm hearing I will be in the same way. So it's also sometimes depending the topic, or depending also the moment of in one's life. Again, not because I was angry or had a bad sleep, but we have chapters in our inner life as well, and sometimes we will take something. There's movement, there is variety, so it's not like a fixed rule. And again, of course, being serious is not something wrong, no, necessarily. Of course, I'm not saying you're implying that. I always recall once one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, like, why he was so serious sometimes in some pictures or some, no, he appeared really like, you may think he's angry with the photographer or something, no, because he was like, serious. No? Of course, you could say also there are cultural elements and this typical thing, like, okay, now comes a picture for the Gaudiya Math Sannyasi. So, like, I know there's a way of posing for the picture, if you will, in certain times and culture. The things are there sometimes, no? And maybe sometimes we are in one century after that, and we may think, okay, I'm Sannyasi, so I should be also there. And it doesn't necessarily work like that, no? So sometimes there are also cultural elements and things like this. But when Prabhupada was asked, why are you so serious at some times? And he basically replied, of course, he was so serious at some times, but at some times you see him smiling and it's like, wow, such an incredible smile. So these two sides are there. No, it's not that the person, because if the person is serious 24/7, as they say in the US, no, 24 hours, 7 days a week, always, they're like, never once smiled. No, we can see smiles there. In our acharya, so they smile also. But when he was asked why you are so serious, he said, well, Krishna consciousness is a very serious affair. No? So I try to deeply contemplate the depth of bhakti, the implications of bhakti, and it's a serious issue. It's not, but he wants to make that point through his seriousness, if you will. No, it's not that I'm angry, it's not, because sometimes, again, we may relate, why he's so serious? We did something wrong. Some offense is there. We enter neurosis and all this. And maybe the sadhu is just like deeply absorbed in grasping the depths and reach of Krishna Bhakti. You know? And of course, we should be doing the same thing. And again, it's not that it can only be done with a serious face. But sometimes seriousness will express itself outwardly because of some internal seriousness. And of course, if you are serious internally, that doesn't mean you cannot smile. But when you will smile, that will be a different smile than just superficial laughing, if you will. No? But it will be, again, accompanied by the deep background. No? So that's why I say, when you see some saintly person, both serious or smiling, in both cases, that's a very special window into their hearts, into their inner world. So it's, we may gain bhakti samskara, very, very deep impressions. No? Patanjali is saying that in, and again, I'm speaking of Prabhupada, I'm not saying this is the same with me or anything. I'm not in that level at all. But I'm making that point. Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras is mentioning same thing. He says that if you contemplate the face of a, I don't know, say saintly person or advanced soul or sage or whatever, that will affect you. No. So that's why we have also these pictures. It's not just decoration, no? Because and that's all, many things, many reasons, but one of them is you look at the face of these personalities and that creates an impression. No? In the same way as you can see, and that's also said in Shastra, if you see the face of the sense enjoyer, of course they have their way of saying that. No? It's like that's worse than drinking poison or something. Like making the point of this creates an impression. If that creates an impression, of course the opposite will create another opposite impression. No? If you see the face of sense enjoyment, engage in sense enjoyment, that's not the best panorama, if you will. If you contemplate the face of a saintly person, engage in seva, oh, that's another creation altogether. So yeah, basically that was the situation. But again, with this, you should not feel, oh, Maharaj is serious when Guru Maharaj is speaking about these things, so we should be serious as him, and you try to force yourself into. I mean, you can take that seriously while laughing also, no? There's this place for hasya-rasa, if you will, in eternity. Especially in our tradition, we are not aspiring to enter santa-rasa in Vaikuntha and become just like contemplative and serious meditative sages, but there will be lila and dynamics and joking. And that would be a very important part of the of the service to Sri Radha and Krishna or Krishna Balaram, depending one circle of aspiration. So in both cases, whether Manjari Bapri and Arma Sakya and these two main currents in our Sampradaya, Hasya is a very prominent feature, you know, in a daily eternal life. So better you know how to laugh, better you know how to play good jokes when that's required, even to increase the experience of rasa or whatever. So many, I mean, when one enters deeply in detail into the eternal dynamics, you see, I mean, they laugh a lot. Yeah. Of course, that's a very intense experience. Now, in a day, if you study the daily life of whether Mahaprabhu or Sri Krishna in Vrindavan, you'll see there are so many extreme peak emotional moments at every second, basically. Now, at one point, you're dying of laughing with Madhu Mangala and the Gopas, as we heard from our Guru Maharaj, and at the point you're dying because you are seeing Krishna dying in separation from Radha, and you empathize with that, and you are dying, but somehow you have to keep yourself alive to keep himself alive. You have to give support and hope and be very expert in consoling him and arranging everything. And after a few minutes or hours, again, the joy of meeting and another type of peak emotion. So all that in one day, and every single day, it's not even the same, but it's getting higher and higher. So this is not a joke, no? That's very serious in that sense, no? So anyhow, that was my attempt in those days. Again, it's not that I'm giving any example or anything, but I was trying just to mostly meditate, yeah, about how serious the topic is and how serious this is, how important this is for my Guru Maharaj, so how serious it's for me as well. If that's important for him, that's important for me, you know? And but again, there are different ways to express how we are trying to take all this matter seriously. So I was not angry. Yeah. And again, the important point is you should, I mean, each one has similar specific nature, so we are individuals and we are not to suppress our individuality and become just like imitators, you know, and trying to force not only the inner adhikar but even the relative nature of another one, you know? Because every person has not only their inner standing in devotion but also they have their nature as humans, acquired nature, which makes them to have a certain character, personality, expressing one. And it's not about just imitating that. I mean, that won't make us any more advanced than we are or close to that person. But I'm saying this because sometimes one says that, okay, this pure devotee is doing this, and oh, so it means we should do that, no? Like when my Guru Maharaj, he quotes, when the devotees met Prabhupada, but never went to India yet, so they saw Prabhupada doing some things that actually are very Indian. They were not just like Prabhupada's, how to say, no, like his own style, only him, but it was Indian, like when, no, like. I mean, you go to India and everyone is doing that. But if you never went to India, think, oh, not that the Guru Maharaj will say, they want to think, oh, that's the spiritual way of saying yes. No? So if you are transcendental, you won't say like this. You will do like this. Because Prabhupada does like this. So that's a transcendental way of affirming something. So they all start to imitate. Think, okay, this is a transcendental, bona fide way of affirmation. Till they went to India. No, and they realize even rickshawa, every single person, like, so yeah. So the point is that you realize, yeah, exactly. So this is the point. No, you like absolutize something which is actually relative. No, so there are relative aspects in the personality even of the highest devotees. So we should be very careful not to absolutize, romanticize, over idealize them. Because we may lose sight of the really absolute side of that person. And we may be even relativizing that and absolutizing something that is just a cultural aspect of their upbringing and their background, which is there. I mean, we are not downplaying the sadhu by saying that. It's just like part of the packaging that accompanies the absolute inner substance. So we should be expert in separating the things. So again, some may be more serious than others, because also even, not only when hearing at some point, but you will, I imagine all of you have known different devotees. I mean, we are a few now here, and more, and advanced sadhus, so you realize not all of them will be the same. They won't conduct themselves the same way, won't speak in the same way, won't sing kirtan the same way, some will be more jolly, some will be more serious, some will play more jokes, some won't play any joke whatsoever, and it's not that one is more merciful or loving than other, because, I mean, some may connect more with my nature, that's one thing, but we should be very careful not to, again, in our mind, label them as inferior or higher only because I like them more or not. So, because it's a way, indirect way of saying, I am better. No? That sound is better than him. Why? Because I like him the most. So what's the implication of that? Because I'm the best, so whatever I like the most, that's the best thing. I mean, that's nonsense. But subtly, those things can be like infiltrated in our way of appreciating sadhu sangha. So that's a delicate thing that we should be careful of, not falling into that. Anyhow, some thoughts on seriousness and hasiras and so on. Next time I will know that you are looking at me and I will try to, okay.
Give the occasional slap.
Okay. Every 2-3 minutes and some alarm or something like zzz. Rasaraj has one question.
Yes, well, it's a line of thinking, then maybe I'm not sure how meaningful it is, but it's in the line of Sharanagati, and you know, the everyday precautions we take in order to survive. I mean, like if you're a fireman, you put on a helmet. If you're a policeman, you carry, you know, a vest or a gun. Or if you drive, you put the seatbelt. If you're a grihasta, like Guru Maharaj says, you're to some extent authorized, let's say, to collect money for certain needs. But I was thinking lately, because, you know, times seem very uneasy, at least from my perspective, and I was thinking about taking some precautions, you know, about certain things, and then I was thinking, okay, but where is the place for Sharanagati then? Because if I think that I can take precaution against this or that, isn't this just like some controlling mentality, or is just common sense? Like, you know, I need to be prepared if something, this or that. I mean, it, whatever it is, happens.
Mm.
So in this line, I was thinking, where is the balance? Maybe you need to, or you need to have very high level of self-reflection to say, okay, now my motivation is this and that, but it's also very hard, and it can be mixed. And also, if there is in your karma something will happen, it will happen, you know, like... Kennedy got killed, but he was maybe the most protected person in the world, you know?
Mm.
And some other people like crash with the plane and they go out and leave. So it's where is the balance? Not to be irresponsible, but not also to forget that actually Krishna protects us.
Mm-hmm. You know? Like they say, Raki Krishna Mariki, Mari Krishna Raki Ke.
Yeah.
If Krishna wants to protect you, nobody can kill you. Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. Of course.
Yeah, but also we don't want Krishna to serve us. I mean, you can drive with your head out of the window and maybe Krishna will protect you, but why we
need to
put him in
yeah, of course.
The situation to have
that, that's not
to
that's not the way of testing how much Krishna loves me or something.
Yeah.
No? But that's it. I mean, I began with that because that's like a general principle, no? Like implying... Krishna is Krishna, if you will. No? He can do whatever he likes. We cannot do whatever we like, but he can do. And of course, when it is safe, he wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. Doesn't mean that he wants to kill you. It's like making a point, like how much he is in control, if you will, and how much we, in comparison to Krishna, I mean, we are not him. No, so, like in general, I will speak on different layers, but to begin with, this idea, okay, he's in control. No? He's a supreme controller. Of course, at the same time, we are individual souls, so we are bestowed with free will. So, of course, free will, also that's another long conversation. What's free will? How free is our will? How much that's aligned with Bhagavan's will and so on. But my point is, of course, it's not that, okay, Krishna is in control, so whatever he wants will happen, and I just sit here and wait. Oh, I'm surrender. Now, surrender doesn't mean like a passive thing, you know, like a passive waiting, because also we may use these words, saranagati and surrender, but the point is, what idea do we have, each of us, when we hear those words? How do we play out that idea in our heads, if you will? Surrender means this. Another one will be surrender means that. So it's always important to unpack the meaning of these words that all of us use in our daily Gaudiya glossary. You know, surrender and so many words. You know, every word we use. You know, go to any glossary of any book and go through every word. And maybe then you do an interview with the local Sangha. What's your understanding of this word? Second person. Probably none of them will match absolutely. And I don't think they should match. I mean, each term can have so many ways of layers of meaning, but surrender is one of the most tricky ones, if you will. No? So, to begin with, because some people do not like the word at all, no? Because we have bad implication with the word surrender. No? In this world, if I go to the street and say someone surrender, they think I'm going to kill them. No? I am a thief. Surrender means like, give me everything or I kill you, basically. That's the way we relate to that word. So we are now Gaudiyas, we receive another notion of surrender, but somehow maybe some previous samskara may get in the way and surrender still is not that tasty for us. So we should like become friends with the term. No? And for becoming friends, we need the term to be properly explained, because if not, it just sounds like, but Maharaj, I have a question. Shut up, surrender. No? Of course, I'm giving an extreme example, but sometimes that happens. No, you are not so surrendered. That's why you are arguing, or because you want. You are not so surrendered. And probably I'm not so surrendered, but just by telling me that, it's not helping me to become more surrendered.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we can play that with guilt and manipulation, that all of you are not as surrendered as Prahlad Maharaj. And probably you'll say, yes, for sure, Maharaj, you are right. But that shouldn't be used as a tool to discourage you, manipulate you. If that creates proper humility and inspiration to follow the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, But that should be said in a certain way, no? Not like pointing, you are not a surrender. Because as they always say, if I point you with one finger, three fingers are pointing me back to me and asking me, what about you? No, where are you? So I get your point. Yes, indeed, it was yesterday. No, day before yesterday in Zurich. Maybe you didn't hear that lecture, but somehow we also spoke some words about that. I will say something today also, just connected with that. The first question one devotee asked, like, okay, we live in these particular unique times at present. Any advice to how to deal with present times? The word surrender didn't appear in the question, but somehow. So, of course, the point is, we could say we live in very unique times. Yes, but also we could say, in every time we can say the same thing. For sure, in Second World War, you could think we are in very unique times. World War One, unique times. So whatever is happening at one particular time, it's very unique. Its time is very unique. And even we are not saying worse or better, because in one sense we could analyze our present time, and in many ways we could say it's worse. But in many ways it's way better than centuries ago, where, I don't know, women didn't have a soul, they were slaves, and everything was like normal, of course. Yeah, that's a fact. So we can say we have evolved as society and civilization in so many ways. And of course, at the same time, there are so many things that are much weirder than centuries ago. So my point is, it's not that necessarily everything is like black and white, no? In the previous times, everything was better. Now everything is worse, or vice versa. It's like a mixture of those things. So I think that's also an important point for us to, as devotees, to also not, how to say, militate against whatever is happening in society or the world at present as something like necessarily worse than ever before, because that's not necessarily the case. No. And you may be seen as like pretty irrelevant and like weird by the rest of society. Like, what are you saying? You know? Of course, not being naive and go to the other extreme either. But regarding, I don't know, for example, you can tell me, okay, we are here living in Eastern Europe, and we were in Poland recently. There is a war going on nearby, to give an example. And we are thinking that probably there may be some eventual problem by being so close to those countries or whatever political alliance is there that may create the implication that war may come here. So I may take some precautions for that regarding my family. And I'm not saying that's wrong. No, of course, there are degrees of that. No, because you can also go neurotic, crazy. Because, I mean, at any moment, they can send an atomic bomb and make Bulgaria disappear. So what can you do to avoid that? You cannot do much. And concerning every day about that, that won't solve anything either. No? You will be like swallowing your own, with your own mind, everything. And probably that never happens. And if it happens, it happens. I mean, my point is, you follow my point. So in that sense, it's not so much be cautious, in that you are not being cautious, that you are being neurotic. Of course, if there are certain practical measures that you can take that won't swallow your whole life and time and mind energy in relation to something that probably may happen. Like, I remember, I don't know, with all this COVID situation came, and again, it's a new thing, and everyone is like, okay, what to do now, and some concerns, and in time, somehow, some things becomes normalized, for better or for worse, depending on the case. But my point is, I remember at one point they were saying, oh, maybe you get some extra food just in case, and people was like gathering
toilet paper
or whatever. So I can understand, I mean, how to say, there are sometimes new situations that sprout and arise, and still you don't have very clear what's actually going on and the scenario, and you may just in case get some extra toilet paper or some extra doll or whatever. And I'm not saying like, oh, you are not surrender, no, you forgot that Krishna was. So there is a place for that. I mean, it's not that you are concerned about whatever, your family. But the point is also, in that concern, you hopefully you are not losing sight of the bigger picture, that is Krishna is still in control. No? But the Krishna is still in control again doesn't mean that I shouldn't do anything. Again, I'm giving a general answer because also it will depend on each devotee and the particular level or way of surrender, how that will play out. And let me share you a few examples. For example, there's this well-known disciple of Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was called Professor Nisikanta Sanyal. I mentioned his civil name because he was probably better known on that. No? He was Bhakti Sudhakara something, his devotional name. So he was a grihastha. He was well known for being a teacher, a professor. He will write a famous book about Mahaprabhu.
We have it here.
You have it there. Okay.
The first.
That's a lot, many volumes. So he will work as a teacher. He has his family, but he was really, really surrendered to his guru. And one aspect of his surrender, and again, I'm not saying every grihastha should do the same way, but that he received that inspiration according to his mood and flavor of surrender. And when he received at the end of the month their monthly salary, he would go to Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, give the whole salary to him, and go to his house. And Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta had to take that, to take something from the ashram and send something back to him to survive. But he was not doing, he was not doing that like a show, like, no, Guru Maharaj then will send me my part, but I will play that I'm so surrendered. He was willing to give everything. No. But my point is, it's not that you just have to imitate him, because if not, you are not a surrender. But there is place for that to happen also. And he had a particular realization that took him to this idea, okay, Krishna will protect, Krishna will provide. But of course, there are degrees of that realization. So I would say, if you have full realization that Krishna will provide, probably you won't be seen taking too many cautions about anything. But again, I'm not saying that to point and say, so you are not that surrender, and that's why you are taking this extra. No, probably we are not that surrender, but that doesn't mean that we should enter into a guilt trip. I mean, there are so many degrees of surrender, and it's not easy to reach those in one moment. So we should take that like a normal thing. No? Do you follow my point? When we read the Bhagavad and you read Ambarish Maharaj or so many other Rantidev and their willingness to, I don't know, even to die, but to feed everyone else who is coming, and even there's some little drops of water and he's not eating for who knows how long, he's just about to die. But someone else comes. Some devas come, these guys as people, mendic. He gives them that last water he had. So he's willing to die, but not to fail in Atiti Deva Bhavan. You have to host a guest as if God himself is coming. So he was such a good host. He was willing to die himself, but feed everyone, everything. And at that moment, of course, the demigods took their form, the real form, and praised Ranti Deva, like, wow, you're such a person. But again, it's not just, okay, let's imitate. No? It's inspiring how I take the essence of that and take that in my own. Because Krishna says in the Gita, yoga krimam bahamyaham. But he says also, ananyas chintayantumam. Tisam, ananyas chintayantumam jijana paripasati tisam nityabhi yuktunam yoga krimam bahamyaham. He's saying, I provide what my devotee lacks. I keep what they have. But also he's mentioning ananyas chintayantama. He's qualifying the degree of the devotee. He's exclusively absorbed in me. He's constantly surrendering my service. Like implying, the implication is for such a devotee may probably not be doing anything and only engage in chanting. And, I mean, not doing anything, but just engage in my bhajan. And he's so surrendered that Krishna will say, I have to take care of that person. So, personally, I have to provide, I have to take him milk, I have to take him this, because he's not doing anything for himself. But he's doing, or she's doing that naturally. Not like, okay, I won't do anything and Krishna's forced to come and feed me. And you don't have that faith. No, it's like he's not coming. he's not coming. I'm hungry. What will happen? No, and you yourself will realize, I don't have that level of realization yet, so I cannot, again, force that. So you have to do whatever you have to do, and that's okay. You try to do whatever you have to do according to your level of faith, and trying to include Krishna in the picture. I mean, that's beautiful in itself. It's not that, oh, it's not beautiful that I don't have the level of surrender of Professor Nisikanta Sanyal or Prahlad Maharaj. It's not beautiful. I'm such a rascal. It's not like that. No? Bhagavatam says, if you acknowledge your own adhikar, that's real virtue and beauty. So it's beautiful in itself to acknowledge where you are and act accordingly. No, and not to do some like dysfunctional imitation where you are trying to do more than what you can or less than what you can. Well, that's also not beautiful. But when you try to be honest and sincere where you are now, and you will, of course, you want to improve and grow, but of course you understand that may take some time, so I try to be as functional as possible. Bhagavatam said, that's beautiful. Bhagavatam is saying, you are beautiful by doing that. Bhagavatam is not saying, you are a rascal because you are not as surrendered as him there. Bhagavatam understands. So we should surrender, and part of surrender, of course, Saranagati, two of the main limbs, are Rakshishati Bishvato, Rakshishati Bishvato, Goptritui Varanam. Especially Goptritui Varanam, it's say this sort of lakshan, or main attribute of Saranagati. And Goptritui Varanam is Krishna is maintaining me. So to have this trust, this confidence. But again, this is there are levels of realizing this. I think all of us, in one level, hopefully, believe that and feel that. But in some other very high levels, still, if we may be put to test, it may be too much. And that's why Krishna is not putting us on that level of test, because that may be too much. So, but on the level we are, in the situation we are, we should try to increase our awareness of Krishna is protecting me. Krishna Rakshishati Vishvasu means to have confidence that Krishna will protect me. Not is protecting me, but also will protect me in the future. And not only protect, but maintain. Protect, maintain. And so I would say that the more we increase that realization, really, the more naturally we will not be that much concerned with taking certain cautions. Because you will really realize how much Krishna intervenes in the life of a devotee. But again, he will intervene as much as you want him to intervene, as you are willing for that to happen. So if that's not happening, Krishna won't intervene that much. He'll say, oh, he doesn't want me to be that much part of his daily dynamic. So I'm part of his life, her life, but still some distance. It's okay, Krishna say, I won't like impose myself. But the more you are really willing to make him be fully part of that, of course he will do that. Guru Maharaj will say, no, at present the deity is not speaking to us. Because we are not so much interested yet on that level of, because if the deity starts to speak, we'll start to engage us in intense service 24 hours a day. I want this, bring me that, I need that, come. And you will be just like when you hear the stories of these great devotees who are just like living for the deity. They have no life apart from that. Because that's the idea, gradually to evolve to that point. Like, okay, I don't have time for anything else. I don't have time for it. But Krishna knows still that's not the case. She's going in that direction. It will take some time and it's okay. It has to be sustainable. So the more we get closer, as you may imagine, the Goswamis were not thinking about having some insurance for their own life, but they were living in Vrindavan and sleeping each night below a different tree. Now, under a different tree, maybe something could happen, some snake could happen. We're not taking caution. Their main caution was, again, taking shelter in Krishna and that was the main insurance system, if you will. No? The more you increase your... Because at the end of the day, let's make this point, where everything else fails, because we can take so many cautions, but at one point, everything else from this world will fail to us. You can have insurance for a car, house, and I'm not against that. You can have all the, but when you have to leave your body, I mean, all the things will just like dissolve one after another. You can take anything there in your journey. So the only thing you will have there is what faith you have developed in Krishna. What's your focus? What's your priority? What's your emergency? So my, again, with this, I'm not downplaying all the other things. I'm just making this point that in one sense, it's important to gradually make Krishna consciousness in a natural way, sustainable way, but and to understand, not make in an artificial way, but really understand, this is the real priority in my life. So every other thing will fall in connection to that topmost priority. And in that context, I take care of my family as a grihastha, as a service to Krishna, not because it's my family. No. If you just conclude like that, that's Maya. Not because the family in itself is Maya, but your conception of the family is Maya. No. And in that case, you will be in the dark well of family life. As it is said sometimes. If you fail to see Krishna in that situation, if you don't fail to see Krishna in that situation, you are out of the well. If you see that as a service and you can see Krishna in so many ways there, I mean, you cannot be in a dark well. No? If Krishna is showing here and there, how can you be in the dark well? No? So I would say, yeah, we have to balance, and that's according to our particular situation, our particular adhikar. In theory, we may know many things, but in practice, sometimes we feel that if I do not take this caution, this is too risky. And again, for some other devotees, they won't feel that's too risky, because they have a different internal situation. But again, we cannot imitate. And if you say, okay, it's my lack of surrender that makes me feel this risky, I should trust more Krishna, I should surrender more. Yes, probably, but it's not that just by saying that it's happening. You follow? So according to your level of realization, still you are feeling that risk. But in theory, you know, I shouldn't be feeling this risk, if you will, but I'm feeling that. So I know actually there's no risk, but Krishna's in full control. But so I shouldn't take any type of caution, because I know that Krishna. But if you don't have the realization, you will go neurotic, basically. You follow my point? So one has to make that arrangement. Okay, they say, no, according to my present situation, my inner consciousness, if you want to put it like that, my inner consciousness at present is telling me, be responsible with this, take care of that. And by doing that, I can also connect that with Krishna. It's not that, oh, I'm taking this caution, so I'm not fully surrendered. It's not necessarily to create that type of panorama. No? You can say, of course, in a higher level of surrender, I may not take this caution, but in my particular level of surrender, I have to take this caution. I feel I have to take it. But how can that be an expression of surrender also? It's not necessarily they are like backwards and going one against the other. You follow my point? In some level, your caution will be, I'll have to work to get some money to feed my kids. I think that makes sense. It doesn't sound too eccentric. No? Like, why are you working? No. Well, I have kids, I have to eat something. Trust Krishna. That's eccentric, probably, for most. So, but while doing that, you are working, you are earning some money and feeding your kid, maintaining family. You try to do all that also as an aspect of your surrender, no? Like trying to make that as an offering to Krishna, because surrender is not just one thing, no? Again, it becomes anukulya sankalpa pratikulya sabarjanam, and then he say the things that we mentioned, atmanikshepam karpaniye. Atmanikshepam means to develop this sense that I belong to Krishna, and to extend that idea to my family, in this case, for example, it's not my, this sense of I, my, it belongs to Krishna. So all these are aspects of surrender. So if you are trying to work on that, accepting what's favorable, rejecting what's unfavorable, you are trying to work on that. It's not that surrender is not in the picture because you are taking some cautions. But of course, I will say that the final answer has a lot to do with consulting your inner consciousness. And I know that that may seem for many like abstract or difficult, because that requires that you have to really pay attention, like where you are at in the moment, you know, and when doing this, with taking this caution, is really, is it fostering surrender in my life, or is actually becoming me, making me more afraid and fearful and lacking trust and calculating everything and wanting to be in control of things that I know that I'm not in control. So one has to really have this type of introspection, no? Like trying to see, okay, how much I'm trying to really go beyond my what I can control or I should take care of, and I'm trying to be a little Krishna, if you will, myself. And that's not healthy anymore. And in different stages, that will be feel different. Again, in different cases, in a very particular stage, some devotee will just... I mean, we have different... famous example of Madhavendra Puri. We spoke about that, I think, last year when we were speaking about Mahaprabhu's Leela. So he will have this standard that he will... I mean, there are different standards of all this. No, I told you, okay, you work to feed your family. That makes sense. But in many cases in the ancient India, some Brahmins will do madhukari, which means to beg. And the standard of begging was, whatever I receive, that's what Krishna wants for us today. If I do not receive anything, okay, Krishna wants us fasting today. And if someday I receive more than what I can consume on that day, I'll give all that at the end of the day in charity. So next day I begin from scratch, in zero. No, like implying this idea, totally dependence of Krishna. Which again, for some it may be like, oh no, thank you. No, I need my bank account, I need my savings, I need my fridge with something just in case. I need my extra toilet paper. So, okay. But even beyond that, well, in one sense that's even relatively lower if you go to Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri will not even beg. He will just say, if Krishna wants me to eat today, I'm sure he will make the arrangement for that to happen. And if he doesn't want, no problem. I don't have a problem. I just want to happen what Krishna wants to happen. I just want that. So he kept not doing anything for that matter, but he was absorbed in bhajan. That's my point also. Because you may say, no, I won't do anything so Krishna maintains me. Yeah, but you have to be doing something meanwhile. No? And how much you can be absorbed in bhajan not doing anything else? That's another question. Because sometimes I hear even devotees, oh Maharaj, I cannot engage in bhajan so much as I would like because I have all these responsibilities. But I hope in a few years, I don't know, my kids will be grown and I will be more free and I will have, like, I already thought, like these 3-4 extra hours per day. And I was thinking, okay, nice, but prepare now in such a way that when you have those 3-4 hours, you will do the proper thing with those 3-4 hours. Because it's easy to say, oh, I would like to chant the double rounds and study more and do this and that. But when you have the time, let's see what you do. Because you can engage in nonsense. I have more time to be distracted. Till you have the possibility, you don't know how you will react. So also we have to be sincere and be aware of how we deal with all the things. So my point again, Madhavendra Puri would just sit and Krishna himself had to appear himself and bring him milk and feed him and make the arrangement, inspire someone from the heart. There is this sadhu, called Madhavendra Puri, bring him some milk. And some person was like, oh, what's this revelation? And they will look, oh... Madhavendra Puri will, okay. Krishna wants that. Again, who can follow that? Yeah. You follow my point. So we could say, that's surrender. Yeah, but it doesn't mean that only the ones who do like that are surrender, or the ones who do like that, at some point everyone should do like that. It doesn't mean that. No. It may take different forms. Yes.
It seems like this type of surrender is like the byproduct of the focus on bhakti. That it is, you know, it's like the effect. It's not that he surrendered, that's why he has the time. So his main
so
idea
absorbed.
Is to be he's so absorbed in
byproduct.
Yes.
I mean that's a type of I think we spoke recently. I don't know where already. I mean, too many lectures, but that's the only type of surrender. That's the only type of detachment we want. Mm-hmm. No, not the one of, okay, I have to get detached. But no, I have to get attached in such a way to bhakti that whatever comes as, and I accept whatever comes as a byproduct of that, not the other way around. It's not like how I stop eating less or stop doing that, but how I, whatever I'm doing, how I surcharge that with bhakti in a more comprehensive way, and naturally, whatever comes as a result of that, okay, that's another thing. No? But you are not, as you say, like thinking about that much. But how do I increase my bhakti? No? At the end of the day, that will be the reply, in one sense, to your question, as simple as it may sound. But again, it's very personal and individual. But, one should be aware of those things. Like, for example, I'm traveling a lot. But I have to be asking, like, I'm torturing all of you every time, like, okay, is there any COVID restriction for the flight? Or it's not like, well, if Krishna wants, he somehow will make me pass without the test or without this, or he will inform me by some spurthy revelation. I will receive an email out of, I don't need to ask others. I'm taking cautions. I'm not sure. I mean, so he expects that we also use our common sense and our, but trying to do that in his service, that's my point. No, it's not that when I'm asking you all these things, I'm trying to control everything and to make everything happen according to my own sweet will or anything like that. But I know Krishna's in control, but I have to try to have everything as clear and in place as possible in his service. So that's also, I would say, the main point, that when you are taking these cautions, we could say, I'm doing that in the concept of taking care of what belongs to Krishna. No. Of course, the point will be, you have to have that attitude. So it's not so much about taking caution or not taking caution. The real caution is how much I'm relating all this to Krishna. Because if you really see your family, your house, everything as Krishna's engaging me in this, these are extensions of my house is not my house, it's Krishna's temple, my wife is not my wife, it's the servant of Hari, and so on. I will be taking care of that paraphernalia, if you will. It's not mine, it's in his service. So that's the real question is, how do I increase that type of attitude in me? No? And if you take cautions in that connection, there is a place for doing that in the sense of taking caution of what belongs to Krishna, if you will, of what's in his service. That's what we call tadiya seva. No, not only service to Krishna, but service of what is to be engaged in the service of Krishna. No, like the famous Damodar Lila. Before Damodar Lila, Yashoda is breastfeeding Krishna, but she has the milk on the stove. And that milk is to be offered for Krishna, to Krishna. So when she sees that the milk is boiling and overflowing, she puts Krishna on one side and goes to save the milk, if you will. But there are many things to say about that, and many explanations. Mm. But the main point is, she thought, this milk is not milk, or my milk. That's something to be offered to my Lala, Krishna. So she put Krishna even on one side. No, to make that point, like, tadiya seva, to serve those things that are dear to Krishna, that are connected to his service. In one sense, that's higher to service directly, direct service to Krishna. Aradhananam sarvisham vishnur aradhanam param tasmat parataram vibhi tadiyanam samarchanam. That's what Mahadev Shiva was saying to Parvati. He's saying, aradhananam sarvisham, of all types of worship, vishnur aradhanam param. The highest is worship of Vishnu. And Parvati gets a little bit discouraged because she's worshipping Shiva. She's not doing the highest worship. But Shiva then said, Tasmat Parataram, but higher than that, than worship of Vishnu, O Devi, is tadiyanam samarjanam, to worship tadiya. Tadiya means those things that are related to him, which are dear to him. And sometimes different items are mentioned, sometimes tools is mentioned, Bhagavat, Ganges, the Vaishnavas. So the idea is all those things that are paraphernalia to serve him, in one sense, are considered as higher than just the direct worship of him. So my point, that's a point that's made to how much we should develop that vision. No? And that includes house, family, kids, everything. There's a place of being taken careful of that. No? Like, for example, in Srila Siddhar Maharaj's ashram, when he was present, he will be the one having the money and giving the money for buying the different things. So sometimes Srila Siddhar Maharaj will be speaking and the devotees were hearing, and some devotees from the ashram will come and, if you will, interrupt the flow of katha and ask him, I need to buy 3 kilos of bananas. And you're like, what? And he will like, no, count and give, like. And one devotee asked, like, but Guru Maharaj, can someone else do that? I mean, you can, you don't need to be doing that. And he said, no, this is to administrate the Lakshmi, which is being offered in service to Krishna. That's the highest service. Sri Radha is doing that in Vrindavan. She's taking care and administering everything for Krishna. So that's a very intimate form of Radha Dasya. So he concluded presenting such a thing that may seem like mundane, dealing with money, as an intimate form of Radha Dasya. So my point is not so much what you are doing, but how you are doing that. No? What's the understanding, the conception you have behind. So I will say that's the main caution and emergency, if you will, that we need to pay attention to, no? To increase our proper conception and attitude. And when that's in place, it's not that you need to, again, to stop doing this or stop doing that, or but you can continue with your life as it is with proper conception, and eventually whatever has to come as a result of doing that properly will take new forms. But again, it's not about stop feeding your children or something like that. No, stop going to work, Krishna. I know sometimes devotees have been a little bit wild in that sense and suggesting those things with a superficial sense of surrender. No, like, stop doing that and just chant and trust that Krishna will make the arrangements. I mean, the point is that probably the one who is saying that doesn't have even that level of trust. And he's telling others to do that. So imagine if someone who doesn't have the trust tells you to do that, and you maybe probably don't have that level of trust either, that, and the other person either, so the result of that would maybe be terrific. And you may end concluding, oh, Krishna is not taking care of me, because it didn't happen. But actually, it's not that Krishna is not taking care. Krishna is wanting to make you to realize you are not to do that, because that's not corresponding to your particular situation. Be more realistic and honest, truthful with who you are. That's what I want. And when you start doing that, you realize, oh, Krishna's there. He's protecting, he's providing this, but he also wants me to do my part. He wants me to be an individual, to acknowledge my present situation, and he will do his part also, but also he's waiting for us to do our part. Now, don't expect him to do his part and to fully make everything happen magically. You have to do your part. No? So, because sometimes, if not, we will use surrender as an excuse. No? Although surrender takes a lot of work, if you will, internally. We may take it cheaply and externally say, just surrender and Krishna will do everything. Like if you just can play a button and I'm surrendered. No, and Krishna's not doing everything. What's going on? No, so you are using surrender as a tool for laziness, for not do your part, and expecting Krishna to maintain and do everything magically. But he's waiting for you to actually surrender. And actually surrender is a process. It's not just a button. No, surrender is a process. It's not a button. No, that's a good slogan. Because then we'll look, where is the surrender button? It's not here in the keyboard. No, I have to get a new machine. It's wrong. So I don't find the surrender button. I can type the word, but the button, I want just one button once. And But sometimes we think in that about, again, you think of surrender as, oh, when I'm surrendered, then Krishna will provide. Like with some laziness implied there, no? But it's not like that. Real surrender has nothing to do with laziness. And Krishna will is providing, and is providing you the chance to surrender. That's one of the things he's providing. You don't expect that he's providing only will come in the form of money and wealth or everything in place. He will provide you challenges. He will provide you the sadhu sangha that will invite you to go out of the comfort zone and surrender. Krishna is providing. No? Because also we use the words. No? Krishna is providing, Krishna is maintaining. How does he do that? That's another chapter altogether. What's his style? What's the form that will take according to the need of my particular case? So we always say, Krishna in the Bhagavatam says, Jasyaham manugri nami harisi tadhanam chanai. To those who I want to show my mercy, I will gradually deprive them of all their wealth. Of course, he said gradually. Of course, and again, what's the meaning of this? Because you can go neurotic with that verse also and say, oh, but then I will become a Shivaist. Shiva, because I see all the worshippers of Shiva have lots of money mostly, and the worshippers of Vishnu are generally poor. No, this was brought in the Bhagavatam, but that's another thing. But on the other side, you say, okay, Krishna is saying that in the Bhagavatam, but also you see someone like Yudhisthira Maharaj performing Yuraja Suya Yajna, which is the topmost opulence on the planet, and he's the greatest devotee. So, and Krishna is not depriving him of his wealth. Of course, he's putting him in a pretty interesting situation. But the point is, Yudhisthira Maharaj is not attached to that. So I provide, and he will use that in my service. So I don't need to take that out from him, because that's not an obstacle for him. So when Krishna is saying, I am depriving you of your wealth, that means if you are, I will deprive from your wealth.
Right, yeah.
Not from you. The word your is more important there. From your hammameti, your false sense of proprietorship, and I'm the owner, and I'm the enjoyer, and I'm the I will deprive you of that. Because I want to show you my mercy. But chanai, gradually. So Krishna is very kind. You can take that verse and go neurotic, or you can take that verse and cry because of neuroticism, or you can take the verse properly understood and cry of, Krishna is so generous, no? Because, I mean, he really, he's my best friend. My best interest is in his mind, not in my mind yet. He knows what I need more than what I know. He's trying to help me more than what I'm trying to help me. But he's doing that in a gradual way also. He's not like a brutal thing that I can... it's not too... So, although sometimes we may feel it brutal, but it's not that he's brutal. If we feel it brutal, it means that there's something we should need to adjust. No, because Krishna will never send you a test that you cannot pass. Maybe you cannot pass by yourself, and you need to surrender a little bit more, and then you can pass. And that was the whole meaning of the test. That you surrender a little bit more, okay, you are getting closer to me, Krishna said. But again, he's doing this like very comprehensive treatment of taking what's extra in you, what's not necessary, what you are attached and working with, but in a chanai, in a sustainable way, in a gradual way, and hopefully with our collaboration. Now hopefully we know he's doing that, and we accept that. We are not against and pushing back and, he's my enemy, I have to be protective, I have to be cautioned, take cautions in relation to Krishna. So, anyhow, at the end of the day, it's a very healthy meditation to feel Krishna is maintaining me. Mm-hmm. So whatever I have in my life, I'll take that as his mercy, and at some point, some of those things are missing. I also have to... Someone stole your car. It doesn't mean, okay, that's Krishna's mercy. That means I shouldn't have a car anymore. No. Because of some reason, your car was stolen. You can try to get a new one. But if after many attempts somehow, every time your car is stolen, like 108 times, probably you will start to think, well, probably Krishna doesn't want me to have a car. And I should accept that. Yeah. I won't have a car in Golok Vrindavan. So I should start to leave my... I was speaking with Navrasa the other day. No, there's no Wi-Fi in Golok.
Yeah.
No? So better you are not too much attached to that, because you won't have that in eternity. So hopefully the way you are projecting to eternity will be sustainable. You follow. You live your life here in a way that when you are invited to eternity, it's not like, but what about my motorbike and my Wi-Fi and my this? Of course, there will be way better technology there. No? Love technology. That's a form of being wired. So anyhow. Some thoughts about that, and I hope that helps. We have what time is it? Okay.
It's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. I don't know if there are any other questions before finishing. We have time for one more question, probably. Also to the Buddhist connected online. The Buddhists are saying pranam. Krishna Kami sending pranams from Germany to all the Buddhists in Bulgaria. Devyapati is sending his pranam from Serbia or Croatia? Which was? Serbia, I think, right?
What is his name?
Devyapati, he was there in the Polish retreat.
Serbia.
Yes, Serbia. So, pranam to all the Vaishnavas. Yes?
I have a question, if you want to have a question. So, naturally, when you're on the path, you kind of see yourself not as a good devotee, because you naturally see that you don't have, you know, the taste that you want, and you don't invest as much time as you want, and, you know, this, like, naturally happens. And you also see that when people praise you, your ego is vivifies, you know, grows bigger,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of separates you from Krishna, because you feel, oh, you know, I'm so good, or I'm the doer, I achieve. And when somebody criticizes you, then, or you are in pain, it's easier to connect with Krishna. But in the same time, when my question is, how can a devotee appreciate his effort in a sense for this appreciation to help him grow? So not to get, as you like to say, neurotic in your humility, or I don't know how to say it, you know. Do you get my question? Is there a proper way for us to be, I don't know how to say, kind to ourselves, or...
Hopefully, yes.
And how is that?
You began saying that sometimes we naturally think of ourselves. I will begin those questions by you speaking about yourself, not including everyone else in how everyone else is feeling, just in case, because some people may not feel the same way. So you, I'm not saying only you are feeling like that, of course,
yes.
But some people may feel like this. Like, so we sometimes may feel, okay, I'm not a good devotee in a natural way, but then if someone is praising me, my ego solidifies. So I will say, that's some kind of contradictory, because if you in a natural way feel you are not a good devotee, if someone is praising you, your ego shouldn't be solidified. That means that you were not feeling naturally not a good devotee. If I naturally feel I'm not a good devotee, naturally, that's an important word. If someone is praising me, I will feel, no, I'm not a good devotee. I shouldn't let my ego be solidified by that praise. That shows that I was not feeling myself the other way. You follow my point, no? So, also that's one point. And also, as you mentioned, in some cases you say, someone criticizes us, or we suffer and we take more shelter in Krishna. You say? In some cases, that's not the case. No, again, I'm saying that may happen to you or some people, but I see people may react in a different way. No? Devotees. No? Suffering comes, and they may, why Krishna is making me suffer? No. Why Krishna? They start like to, of course, that's not the ideal reply. The idea is that you take more shelter in Krishna, of course. But sometimes that doesn't happen. Someone criticizes you, and it's not that takes you to take more shelter in Krishna. Maybe that takes you to to try to defend and protect, but from an egoic side instead of understanding Krishna is protecting me. Probably that criticism is part of his protection. So, because, I mean, someone can criticize me. And that may come with a bad intention, but nonetheless that's happening. For some reason that's happening in my life, so I have to learn something from this. If not, this shouldn't be happening. For some reason this is happening. For some reason someone is blaspheming me, or someone is like creating a whole saga about whatever. That those things happen. People can create you stories. And although they are not true, for some reason you are facing them. So you have to take more shelter, of course. But again, I'm not saying every people do that. Some people get discouraged and distracted from their shelter, and who knows in which direction they go. So that those are some clarifications regarding the first formulation of your question, but then you kind of simplified the presentation, saying that is there any way that we can be kind to ourselves? Right?
Yes. So that like makes us grow more, like makes us give more service. In that, how is that done? I don't know.
Of course, that should be the case, because if that's not happening, stop there. I mean, you cannot advance, you cannot grow, no? So, how to do that? The how questions are always difficult, because there's not, again, one button that says how. As there's no button that says surrender, how? And you play, okay, tling, okay, it's happening. In one sense, you have to figure that out yourself. And that's like, oh, Maharaj, don't say that. Give me the clue, the key, the revelation. The key and the revelation is you have to figure out that yourself. Because it won't happen in the same way for every person. Again, I always, sorry if it sounds like Maharaj, always the same thing you are repeating. My gosh. But for me, that's a way of establishing that we are personalists and we are not impersonalists. Because if I just try to share magical formulas of universal application, it's a way of impersonalism. Of course, in a general way, I can say Mahamantra is the universal formula. But yes, but at the same time, the way to approach it, all the details in between chanting and your lifestyle, that's very unique and individual. No? It's not that chant and be happy. No more instruction, nothing else needed to. No, but I have chant and be happy. Chant and be happy. It's like, oh my gosh. No, I need some instruction to how to lead my lifestyle in connection to the chanting according to my specific situation. So we have to always reach this point of individual. We are individuals and we are very specific. And in that specificity, sometimes we need to get to know ourselves more and know how to become more skilled and expert in dealing with ourselves. And to one point, we cannot expect someone else to do that for ourselves, you know? Even from the guru. The guru may give mantra, harinam, siksha, good example, bus.
No.
You go to India, there was a bus. Period. That's it. Stop. Not like in playing. You shouldn't expect more than that. That's quite enough. So the rest is, you take all that, and you try to apply it to you. And then you start to see how, of course, I'm not saying that there won't be anyone trying to help you in that, but there's a part that you also have to like, okay, how in my particular case, with my acquired nature in this particular stage, how can I become more generous to me in the concept? But that may be different from how Dayal, Rasaraj, Tarun Krishna will do. I mean, all the universal ideas, you should all do that. But the how question generally is really individual, because Ram Kelly is an entity, Rasaraj is an entity, and of course I know all of you on some level or another, and we could say something, and I'm trying to say something, and I may say something more. But at one point it's a lot about, which again is the the hard part, the difficult part, because, I don't like to do that. I don't like to be introspective and contemplate. I look at myself and try to think of, solve that for myself, Maharaj. You are Maharaj. But sometimes, I'm not saying that you are expecting this from me. I'm just giving this general situation that, or like Guru Maharaj sometimes say, my Guru Maharaj said, many of these house questions, all of them are resolved with one answer. All are replied with one answer. Because there are many of these questions. How we surrender, how, which again, I'm not criticizing the house question, I'm just making a point. He will say, all of these house questions are replied with one word answer, which is practice. Mm. Of course, practice doesn't mean, again, a mechanical execution of something. Okay, bottom, practice. Mm. No, but practice means, as our Guru told you now in Bulgaria, no, I really like that reply when if I'm not mistaken, who was asking? Maybe it was Uddhav or someone. I think he asked him, like, so what do you expect from us?
What do you expect from a Diksha-initiated devotee?
Exactly. Yeah. What do you expect from your disciples who have received initiation from you? I say, well, I'm basically, Diksha means that I'm giving you mantra, no? And I expect that you chant the mantra, to begin with, no, let's be practical, but also that you live your lifestyle, live your life in such a way that when you sit to chant your mantra, you actually chant your mantra. You actually enter into that, do that as nicely as possible. But then you realize, oh, for doing that as nicely as possible, because to chant my mantra, it seems like, oh, that will take a few minutes per day, so that's not a big deal. But then you realize, oh, for me to do that nicely, I have to adjust the remaining 23 and a half hours so I can that chanting as nicely as possible in his service. So in that way, he extended the idea, not just practice means, no, when I'm sitting and doing something, but everything you are doing the whole day, that's your practice of how you are thinking about those things, how you're dealing about those things. So these house questions, again, in one sense, I reply with this word practice. And practice is, again, not only when I sit to chant my mantra or something, but it's from the day the moment you woke up to when you woke to sleep, and hopefully your sleeping time as well. At some point, we may render seva there. But yeah, the principle is we should be generous with ourselves. And I think big part of today's class have been about that also, no? About that we have to acknowledge our present position, not try to imitate, not try to force yourself into where you are not more nor less, and trying to see that Bhagavatam is saying there is beauty in recognizing your present state. I think all these are like ways of saying be compassionate to yourself. No, it's not just about bhakti is not about negativity, about chastising. That's not humility, that's not surrender, about negative feelings towards myself. But when you just get closer to something great and positive, you may feel small, but you feel small in connection to the great thing. It's not that you feel small and isolated small. No? And I'm small and I'm this, so little. And that's all it is. Now, your smallness is the whole. Well, nobody's saying that. No? It's such a great and beautiful and incredible prospect, and this mercy of Mahaprabhu and Guru and Vaishnava is like, no, I'm small. But I cannot keep looking at that. No, I cannot stop looking at that. That's so incredible. Oh yeah, I'm also small. But that smallness will be perceived in connection to the greatness of the gift that is coming. So in that sense, it should fulfill you with hope and inspiration. It's not like... The problem is when you just over-concentrate in how small you are or how, whatever, unqualified and blah, blah, blah. And it's all about you. So that becomes an ego affair. And you lose sight. You become distracted of seeing the greater picture with, as I always like to say, and I will repeat it 108 times if that's necessary... You put all your anarthas and your ugly stuff in one side of the scale, you put the mercy of Mahaprabhu on another side of the scale, there's no point of comparison. All your smallness and darkness is insignificant in comparison to that bright future that is waiting for you. So we should... And we are receiving that impetus from Guru and the sadhus. They are not discouraging us and saying, you are stupid, you don't know anything good, stop doing that, you should... whatever. So it's not about like the environment is pushing us in that direction. So with my own self, why I'm doing that, and sometimes, as we know, sometimes that may be connected to issues from childhood experiences and trauma. Sometimes we have to heal those sections, if you will, in our psyche for us to be functional and healthy. So of course I'm not against that. And that will be part of our sadhaka project, so we can be humanly whole, complete, to really give ourselves to the process without entering into guilt trips or projecting our own trauma into the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Or because we don't want that to happen. No? We don't want just to miss Mahaprabhu's mercy and misread and filter our trauma and make a whole and proper combination of that, no? So, I mean, Gurudev is generous to us, sadhus are generous to us. If we are not generous to us, I mean, what does it mean to be generous to us? Of course, no? That means to accept that the generosity is coming from so many places. It doesn't mean that I have to deserve that, but it's coming. So that's an important point. It's not that being generous to me is like, I'm incredible, I'm the greatest person ever, nobody's as qualified as me. No? It's not about feeding your ego and thinking all about in terms of deserving stuff. I'm generous. You're not being generous if you do that. But generous means basically that you allow yourself you allow beautiful things to happen in your life, and you allow yourself to recognize those things are coming, are happening. Maybe I don't deserve them, but I need them, and they are coming, and I cannot deny them, and I have to be grateful for that, and that makes my life fortunate. So I think that's a very good combination, that you remain humble, because if not in the name of being generous to yourself, we have so many of these philosophies that is just about like me, I, from a very isolated sense, and it's not helping you to develop as a devotee. But of course the other extreme is not helpful either, no? Like I'm just like take the whip and start like the session, daily session of whipping. No? So we should learn to balance all these emotions that also we see in Shastra and we see in the devotees. No, Mahaprabhu is saying, he's expressing lamentation, he's expressing repentance also. When he's saying I have a taste for the holy name. But first he says three lines in that same verse. Oh, Krishna is so merciful. All these names, so many names, all Shaktis are there. No hard and fast rule. He's so loving. He's so merciful. So his first three lines of appreciation and then one line of lamentation after the appreciation. No? Because if you begin with the lamentation, maybe there's no appreciation after. You cannot see anything. You're just lamentation. But if you see all these beautiful things that are coming, you feel, I'm not taking full advantage of that. I could do better in a sustainable way. Not I could do better, but in a way that you cannot. There is place for feeling some remorse, repentance, but in a way that is inspiring you to grow. You have to judge the tree by its fruits. If the result is inspiration and depth and enthusiasm and commitment, all emotions are valid, if you will, if that result is there. But if the result is you are becoming more self-centered, distracted, depressed, discouraged, whatever action or emotion is taking you there, that's not valid, basically. So the rest we should see how to figure that out in our own particular constellation, if you will. No? That may change in time also. And sometimes we have to work with ourselves in some way, in some other time we realize, okay, now it's time for this adjustment. So that means we have to keep watching. No? Again, that's part of our surrender also. It's not like just Krishna protect me and do all the adjustment, and just I'm just like passively waiting. No, he wants to see us investing our self and our individuality. Again, we have to become, this is Jungian terms, I think, once I asked Dayal Nitai to do some research for me about that, individuation, which means individuation means do all that you can with your individuality. All that you can reach, that means individuation. You are an individual, what's the highest reach of expressing who you are as an individual unit? That's our commitment as Gaudiyas, as devotees, disciples. We want to offer ourselves in full individuality for the pleasure of Krishna. And for that we have to solve and deal with so many things of our personality first. But that's part of the project, of the higher project, of the bigger picture. So you are all doing very nicely, so it's not about it. We should be careful not to let that particular voice speak too loudly. And when that's happening, we should be very, as much as we can, intelligent to detect from when that's coming, what's the background of that. That's happening. Sometimes it's an automatic reaction to some things because of so many similar situations in the past that trigger that. But we are now in a different constellation with the grace of Bhakti in our lives. So we should become expert in when that's coming, putting pause, taking a distance, and understanding that for what it is, instead of getting carried by that and who knows ending where. And if we see that the voice keeps speaking too loudly, as Raghunath Das Goswami says in the Manasiksha, then he says, no, when all these anarthas are attacking you, he will mention some, but you put the one that you feel is attacking you in that moment, you just run and cry out to the highway. He said to the policeman of Bhakavit. Bhakavit is one name of Krishna, who is the enemy of Bhakasura. And Bhakasura has to do with he who had like false religion or false spirituality or whatever. But the point he makes there is whenever some of these things appear to devour you, and you try to understand that, but it's too much, then you run to a Vaishnava and cry for help. Also, it sounds simple, but we have to do that. We have to be intelligent, anticipate, no? Caution. So when that's happening, we know. I met many devotees that sometimes I told them, no? Because Maharaj, I have this situation, this problem, sometimes it's come. And I say, well, when you see that coming, if you see it's not in your control to discern and put a pause, you just call me or someone, I mean, immediately. Like, Maharaj, I don't know, this particular impulse is coming and I know where it will end. Help me, tell me something, preach to me or something. Even though it sounds like silly, it's not silly. I mean, you're being intelligent. You're acknowledging where you are and you're trying to take the best possible shelter in that moment. So it's very high thinking in one sense. Of course, the ego may say, no, I won't tell that. They will realize that I'm such an embarrassment. There comes all this ego trip. But if you are sincere, you will realize, yeah, it will be more embarrassing what will happen if I don't do the call. Although nobody will know, but it's embarrassing. So, and sometimes they, and even those, this has happened many times, and I know, oh, Maharaj, I did this again. I say, why you didn't write to me? You call it. Oh, because I was ashamed, I was embarrassed at the moment. So anyhow, again, there's always another chance, but my point is, sometimes that's the only resource. Let's say Maharaj once say that, when the devotee told you, Guru Maharaj says, it lasts anger, greed, envy, all these different tendencies or others. We feel that suddenly they come like an army attacking us, what to do? So you run immediately to the feet of a Vaishnava and cry for urgency for help. There's no time to think too much what to do. We may not have the capacity of, wait a minute, no, this is coming, this background is from this, so I won't pay attention. In many cases, we may not have the ability to, which is to act quickly. So some tactic will be check the phone, and it's not the phone, but just, I don't have a phone, so I have to use something. Help, this is happening. say something, direct my attention to the proper place. I know everything is okay and Krishna is still protecting me, but I'm losing sight of that. And, you follow my point. No? And I'm sure that the very moment that you take that proper shelter and direction, immediately you start to feel some relief. Immediately. By the very fact of resorting to the proper shelter. So, yeah, some hopefully practical advice that may help also to how to navigate. Because that's the sadhaka's journey. You know? There is beauty and messiness, as Archana Siddhi will say. So there will be days that everything flows in a way. I mean, everything is beauty in one sense, even the messiness. But the point is sometimes we may have some cloudy days, some difficult situation, and we may need to know what to do, and maybe too much only for ourselves to figure that out. Although I told you, you have to learn to figure that out, because that's still there. But at some point, sometime we may feel, I cannot this time, this moment. Okay, press the there's about the emergency call button, and for sure there will be some relief, some support, some love coming in return. And that will help us then to look at ourselves and know what to do. So there's still hope. Mm-hmm. Lots of more hope than what we can see. So Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Purnima Ananda Hari.